Well, we're still in Sagittarius. It is the most positive sign of all of the signs in the constellations. Sagittarius sits on the north side of the camp, which speaks of adversarial things. And his name means to be level, to be righteous. And if there's ever been a time we need to see righteousness on many levels throughout our earth, it's now. So it's an encouraging sign. Its name also means happiness, prosperity. I can't even remember all, but righteousness means he's got a balance, so to speak. Because he has a balance, and he shows that he is man, or beast, and divinity in man, because we all live among the beast, you know, all of us are born among the beast in the manger of wherever we are, because we get here with them. He's a straight shooter, and if you know any Sagittariuses or know about the sign at all, you'll know one in a heartbeat, if the spiritual minded anyway. I'll never forget one of the times that Jim Miner was here. He's definitely Sagittarius. All the men had went to the deck. It was during our big meeting at the Wildcat Den. So it was like Johnny and Lynn and Gary and Rokas. I remember several men out there on the deck, and the women were in the kitchen. You know how it gets. Well, Jim began to speak about an issue that was in his heart. And he just shot that arrow so straight. You know, you get worried when they're around because they make a point. They have a point to make, and they're going to make their point. And they don't hem-haw about it. They just tell you like it is, so to speak. So that's the nature of the Sagittarius. He points his arrow straight because his intention, if he's spiritual-minded, is to make a point. Now, if he's not spiritual-minded, he's still going to make a point. It just might be pointed in the wrong direction. And anyway, all of this sign is beautiful because we see the dragons cast down. Well, as you know, dragons are imaginary creatures that the different cultures, it's all kinds of Greek mythology, Roman mythology, Norse mythology, Egyptian mythology. So they all interpreted this their way and inserted the myth into our astrology. So a lot of things have to go back and be interpreted. They weren't meant to be interpreted by myth, but it happened that way, I guess, to make us dig. So it's important that we understand the myth behind these things. And of course, most of us are smart enough after 2 years old to know there's no such thing as a dragon. You know, that's just an imaginary, out of the man's imagination, one of the worst things you can think of is a fire-breathing dragon. Well, we sang Come Up Hither, and it says, no dragons can abide here. Do they get there? Oh, they can climb their way into the heavens, but they can't live in that spiritual atmosphere because they can't live in it at all, because they can't flow with it or be part of it, and they certainly can't swallow it up. So it's the same as the serpent in your garden. They just took it and made it a whole lot worse and a whole lot bigger. Those that believe in a living, burning hell keep making it bigger. I mean, it is amazing to make it scarier and scarier and scarier. And they do a good job at it, but that's going by the wayside. I believe 70% of our preachers are theologians, teachers, believe there is no living, burning hell. And why? What would be the need of that? Just tell me, what would be the need of that? However, we can experience hell walking around thinking. So it's right up there between your eyeballs. God would not create a burning hell to put the people he loves in. But King James took that word and really misused it all through the scripture. Actually, the words death, hell, and the grave are used a lot together. The scripture tells me that will be swallowed up. I think that speaks, the death that it speaks of, has to do nothing with natural death, but spiritually dead people. And it don't take long to know one. This guy plays the harp. You know, David did that. It was an important thing. So that's bringing beautiful things into your life and fixing your gaze on the beauty. However, we're born with the power of choice. So if you like your dragon, think on him and just let it eat your brain up and everybody around you. You can do that if you like. But this altar is actually burning downward, which speaks of a lower realm of thinking. This is ego. Reasoning will always reason God out. It's such an arrogant thing, reasoning. Anyway, said more than I meant to say about that, but it's a good sign. And it so beautifully precedes Capricorn. Actually, it is preparing man to go into Capricorn. Capricorn is Naphtali, that tribe of Naphtali, and his name means wrestling. So he deals with stuff. But in the Capricornian age, everything is revealed. Every thought, every misuse. So if I'm going to live over there, we have Aquarius. This is a reversed order that we go in. First, where we are today for 2,000 years, which speaks of the man bringing forth the divine feminine because she's hid within him. And it also speaks of the scapegoat. Karen so beautifully shared what the spiritual meanings to that scapegoat. And that's the one that carries all the understanding of man's sin or not sin on his shoulders. So in the Capricornian age, it will be many requirements that are not yet in this age. All this stuff we're hearing on TV and all the different factions and people's sore toes or bruised ego, I'm going, or what was the word they used for Berkeley? What kind of ego, or not ego, but emotions that they were letting them march over. Anyway, I guess it was Monday morning we listened to that, and I just got irate. They might harm the emotions of the student body. I promise you, I wouldn't harm them. I would cut them in two. Emotionally bruised. Give me a break. We came here to be emotionally bruised so we could heal and understand. Jesus Christ walked the earth to show us that you can walk in humanity and still fulfill your divinity and know everything. It's not going to rain pennies from heaven. It's not going to do all those things man thinks is going to happen, but it will rain heavenly manna on you if you have a relationship. And it will feed you in the midst of whatever you go through. So, in that Capricornian age, he is a lawman. Saturn is the planet for Capricorn. It rules every bit of our government, and there, of course, there's great conflict right now in Capricorn because they're not submitting to the divine order. Anyway, it's a beautiful sign that we'll be preparing a people to live in the Capricornian age when they're not getting by with zero. They'll learn to divide it perfect.
When does that start?
The Capricornian age immediately follows the Aquarian age. No. Yes, it does. It follows the Aquarian age. Capricorn is next, and then Sagittarius is behind it in that order. In the order we're in now, it precedes. But in the reversed order, which we're going in, Capricorn will be next. And then we can enjoy the order and all the things that this age brings because it will be so beautiful. A great step forward. But you got to get cat through Capricorn first. And they're already dealing with things that are causes thoughts to be revealed, so to speak. Then there'll be no question. No question. Well, today we're in a Virgo moon, and she's analytical. So she believes in bringing things into reality. She's an earth sign, just like Capricorn. Something has to make it be, whatever we are, put into this shoe leather. Or what's the point? Walk it out. And this is what this declares. There is a woman, a divine feminine within mankind, that has so beautifully begun to blossom in understanding. Of course, God took a negative move, women's rights, so to speak, because the woman keeps wanting to take it further. She's denying her own femininity. Well, that is just stupid. Stupid. If you're female, that's what you are. Everybody wants to make it something else or claim all these things that are effective and blah, 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 whatever. It's just an excuse. But anyway, in and this is what moon we're in. This changes today from Virgo to Libra, so it'll be a little more balanced because she's the analyzer. Okay, I got a sound to do this thing.
You want to sit like that?
Yeah, I'll sit there. I can't hardly teach sitting down. Get in a row, I guess, or something.
You
can
put a chair there, too.
Oh, I'm okay. I can hold this, I think. I don't know if I'll read in this a lot. Up here. Come up and sit in a comfortable chair. No wonder your back hurts, MJ. If we had a congregation.
You should change those chairs and put
Willie's so back we could not see it, but we don't.
I sit back here because I got more leg room.
Yeah.
Well, just make your place. Get your leg room. It ain't like we got a fast crowd here. Well, I think today I'm going to deal with the upcoming year. We've heard all kinds of predictions, and I'll just tell you what I know. Some of the prophets, a couple of them that I know that speak truth as a rule, I pay attention to what they say. But not all prophets do I listen to. But when you got a good track record, why not? Just listen to them. And I believe it was the will of God, we call him. His name's Will. So, and they call him the will of God because he lives so close to the Father. He's a very spiritual man. Sent us something on Facebook. It was completely for me a thing to do with some political things that have been done, period. Anyway, it was very informative, and I normally don't read those things because I'm not interested. But if he thought it was interesting, I thought maybe I should just add a look at this. And it was rather enlightening with facts together. It was an article that he didn't write. Do you remember where it was written, who it was?
Jonathan Cain, was he, did he,
I don't know,
was that Sherman, did it have to do with the Shemitah effect?
Yeah.
From end of September of this year and the end of September of next year in that Sabbath year.
Yes.
So where the, you know, it's, it becomes, it can be a year of release, but if people don't pay attention and, you know, righteousness is being, right now, we're looking at, right as a government, as our country is looking at righteousness, it can become a curse then for us.
Yes.
So, and we may end up having a, they're expecting that that's what's going to happen anyway. They're looking, the negative side of it.
Yeah, this is the negative side, so I'm not talking about that. But, and it, I'm not saying anything couldn't happen because I don't know God's mind most of the time in those affairs at all. I mean, I know what's hitting us, but as far as the heart of God, what's going to occur, I'm not sure. I don't think America is repentant, if you know what I mean. Or most of them don't know how to be anymore. So we've gotten away from what our fathers intended for our country on so many realms. It's going to have to come a divine justice. And God was such a God of order that I don't know how man thinks he's going to escape order. It is in everything in life. Penny and I were having a conversation Saturday that goes right in, or Friday night. And we were talking about the way she keeps her home and things. And she's very orderly. She knows where everything is in her house. She doesn't have to hunt anything. And she said, when I was a little girl, if Terry and I had a dirty room, blah, blah, you put some restriction. Until the room was cleaned up, we couldn't leave or go and do what we wanted to do. And she said, the other thing was I could never find anything. So she said, I learned if it wasn't found, I wasn't going nowhere. So she said it was just easier to put things in a place and keep them there. So that's just a little thing, and she grabbed hold of that, and glad she did for her. But I enforced that when they were little because I felt like it was the right thing to do. If you touch it, anything you touch, put it away when you're done, where you got it, clean for the next guy. That's just a little bit rude, but it is considerate. Because if you go and hunt something and it's torn up or dirty, I go to look into who did it. All right, which one did this? And this is not how you do it. Anyway, so I was just asking about 2015 and what it meant, spiritually speaking, to us. And I use my Kabbalah, because they don't take one word to explain something. It goes into great lengths, which is, to me, beautiful. It's better than just one word. So this year, we're coming into 2015. That's the year. Okay. That's the number 2. So let's read what 2 says. Actually, it's Hebrew 2 is right there, you can see it. But the Hebrew is never concise. It elaborates. Which I like, because that makes me look at things with a broader scale. Not just the way I want to look at it, but I got to look at it. So. The first Hebrew letter is a leaf. It's just like our A, except the Hebrews, I really believe God wrote that language because it's so broad. But the second letter is Bet, which means house. In the Greek, it's Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. All of those go that way, except the Hebrew reads backwards. But the number 2 is Bet. So I think this is going to get down to a real personal message, because each of us has something within us. And we need to know that we house something valuable inside of us. Bet means house of. It means the home, where you find your peace in yourself. It's the first letter of the word Brahma, blessing, Bet, written large, is the very first letter in the Torah. Bereshit means in the beginning. The whole Torah thus becomes the energy of blessing and the shelter of a home. So what each of us house in ourselves and our natural homes too, people can feel it. What you're at home with in here is very important, knowing who you are, who you really are. I'm not going to read every word because this will get lengthy, but some of the things I feel that hit me. For the nomadic early Jews, houses were tents. Well, we know this. God said, I'm going to call a people that's not a people. And so they became tent dwellers. But they were temporary dwelling places. So for hundreds of years, the Jews wandered at home in their tents, praying in their tabernacles. But at the same time, they kept yearning for a homeland. Often when people are dying, they'll say, I'm going home. I think that's so beautiful. Indeed, they're going home. Back to their real home. They know then that they are humanity with divinity keeping them alive. Every breath is God that you breathe. You may not use it for God. He's not going to make you use it for Him, because He wanted man to have something that no creation had ever had, and that was the power of your choice. We saw that yesterday in your little incident with your son. The power of choice can take you to a high, high, beautiful place. Or it can take you to hell and back two or three times. So choice is important. For me, when I make a choice, you kind of need to pass it before your better part, your divinity. I just sometimes say, Father, what is your heart? What is your heart for this? Because I'm not sure. Now, some things are a no-brainer. When you get 75 years old, you have a little common sense, so you don't have to ask certain questions. Anyway, they were looking for a house, so it says, my house shall be a house of prayer for all the people. Let me tell you right now. I don't see them praying on TV much, not unless it's a preacher or something. It's not a house of prayer. It's far from it. But me, that's like, was it Bruce saying he couldn't help others sometime, or was it you? Anyway, that power of choice that lives in your house is really a beautiful thing. But you ought to profit by it and thereby grow and move out of certain modes of thinking. Everyone in this room has some false thinking. I promise you, I'm included, that is not in line with the Father. It just is not. It's up to you to get in line. When he says that, letting go of our preconceived cultural taught ideas. Well, if you live in a home like I lived in, I was taught certain things, you know. But I found out some of those things were not necessarily the way it needed to go. So letting go of preconceived ideas, not being attached to our thoughts, or feeling the ground under our feet, seeing the open sky above, we can be at home with the changing circumstances of our lives. Then our houses, no matter how flimsy or humble, become houses of prayer for all people and blessings to all. When we hear the voice of Bet, we are called to ponder the nature of the blessing. I always loved what Anise would have to say when some things had occurred that she didn't particularly like or they didn't feel good. She'd say, well, that was a blessing I could have lived without. So I like that. It's interesting. One way is to become aware of how we're already blessed. Bruce voiced that at the beginning of the meeting. He recognizes the blessing and you also. And we are blessed, all of us. We could be in a lot worse conditions and places. Okay. Feeling blessed opens the way for us to find tangible ways to bless others. The real challenge, however, is to bless even when we don't feel blessed. Perhaps we're even cursed. Can we still bless them? Well, I can get there. I don't do it immediately, but I can get there and bless them.
Well, but
it's all right.
No, it just reminded me of that scripture, whatever we bind on earth is bound in heaven, whatever we release on earth is released in heaven, so that in that we can do that. We can turn a curse into a blessing by just releasing it, letting it go.
If we let it go, yes. Bet challenges us to maintain an intention of blessing as we journey to and fro throughout the landscape of our whole lives. So somebody might not be blessing you, but like she said, you can bless them anyway. And I can say it, I don't always mean it, so I really would like to learn to say it and sincerely mean it, because God is, he can't fool. God's unfoolable.
Yeah.
Now, Beth's shadow is this. There is a danger in taking this too literally. The desire for one's house to be a house of prayer for all people, the belief that one's spiritual home is better than all others, is a negative thing. And I've been guilty of that. That one mode of religious practice deserves to become predominant has been the justification for ways and persecutions and atrocities throughout history. Because some other guy thought his way was better. You can just pick Hitler and Stalin if you like.
Well, I've heard it said there's been more wars fought in the name of religion than any other religion.
Really? Nowadays, there is even violence of Jews against other Jews who have different views of what it means to be a Jew. This is an example of the danger that inevitably accompanies such chauvinistic thinking. Bette reminds us to be alert to the tendency within ourselves of having any feelings of self-righteous supremacy and superiority. I'm going, phew. I hope I can teach this, God. Because none of us could deny that that doesn't touch us sometime. Well, my house is better than your house, blah, blah. The other guy's house is none of our business. If they do keep it, if they don't keep it, if it's right, if it's wrong, we need to keep our mouth shut. Unless we want to do it and pay the price. And I really mean that. So, 2000. Zeros are wonderful in the alphabet, this alphabet, or any alphabet. It is that infinite power. It can speak of emptiness, it's paradoxical, or it can speak of the womb bearing the seed. So it is the most transitional number in the whole of Kabbalah, in everything. Just like I said, it can represent emptiness. And then they go on to talk about this zero. Remember, one time Morgan was about 12, and just T and I and Johnny were talking. He said, the thing that blows me away about God is he takes nothing and makes something. The nothingness and makes something. Such a beautiful thing. So we have we have the two and the zero for 2015. And then we move into the next Hebrew letter, which is Aleph, always. Let's see, we'll go back there and read a little bit of that. I know you've heard this before, but we'll do it again. Aleph is the Hebrew word for leader or chieftain. The alphabet is the chief of all the letters that follow it. In the Hebrew numerical system, where each letter represents a number two. That's amazing. It has a number under each Hebrew letter. I believe there are 22. The 23rd is called the unknown. And I've heard some predictions about that in this year, the unknown, that a lot of us will walk and think in places that we haven't known about before, or just kind of being, well, I remember Rokas said, he said, I can't see right now. I'm going around the corner. God's making me go around the corner. And I was going, I like that. So that stuck with me. Sometimes we can't see where a thing is going. Or we can predict, because we all do that. So, it's just like, you got to do it by faith then. And faith is important for us to believe, well, it's going to turn out right. You just have to hope and believe that it's going to turn out right. It's not going to turn out like JP's design or my design or your design or yours or yours. But it's going to have the outcome in the end that it's supposed to have. So, let's see if I read any more on that, because I don't want to hold it. Anyway. When a leaf materializes in our hands, it is an opportunity to recall what is primary. What's the number one thing we should keep in mind? You gave an example with Michael. He knew he needed to wear his goggles, but he just thought, well, maybe this time I can get by with this. I don't know how many times Francis took Speed to the hospital because he would weld something without using, what do they wear, honey? A welding shield. And he would ruin his eyes. I mean, be in excruciating pain. And I know that happened at least three times while I knew them. And I was thinking, well, don't he know about it? Looks like the first time we get really burnt or hurt, we could say this pain is to wake me up and make me know not to do it that way again. However, some of us think we can leap tall buildings at a single bound, that we're Superman, so we go ahead and do what we shouldn't do. It's, you know, we just pass it off. Spirit says, gives you a little nudge. Maybe you ought not to do that way. Well, you just go on and do it. Hello. So we know the outcome. Yeah, a leaf indicates a time to strip away all that is superfluous and get back to the very basic thing. We started off this meeting, or you all did, with take care of yourself first. And that's hard to get because we have so many misplaced compassions. Some people have no compassion, so I'm thankful for compassion. But when it's an abusive compassion, so to speak, somebody's begun to use you, it is no longer compassion. It's you being used. That is you prostituting yourself to whatever has grabbed your mind at the time, and or your heart. I mean, it can come with tears and weeping and gnashing of teeth, but I've learned, if I haven't taken care of me and him in a situation, I don't need to be helping nobody else. Right? Tend to me and he first. Well, the inside me, yes. But he is my husband. That is primary. There are things outside of that we're a part of, but it don't necessarily mean we just have to lay down and give up and do what we think we ought to do just because we feel compassion.
Well, that's wise, too.
Well, yeah, it takes a while to learn wisdom. This challenges us with, where are your priorities? And keep your face set like a flint on the basic priorities. What's going on out there is not up to you to take care of at all. It's not up to you. So we have to learn to walk circumspectly. This rabbi, Aaron Kahn, was asked what he had learned from his teacher, the great Magid. I've never heard of some of these Jewish names, so I don't know who he was, obviously a teacher. He said, "Why, nothing at all," he said. When they pressed him again to explain what he meant by that, he added, "The nothing at all is what I learned. I learned the meaning of nothingness. I learned that I am nothing at all, and that I still am, notwithstanding." Of course, I'm going, okay. I hadn't got quite got my head on his, but I understand what he's saying. The basic ambiguity of existence, Rabbi Aaron is describing, is expressed through the alif. The word ambiguity has an original meaning of driving in two different directions. And it may reminded me of one of my nephews told his mother that he was going to divorce that wife because they were going down two different roads. He said, "I'm over the two different roads." Do you see what I'm saying? And he probably did a wise thing. I don't know. I'm not in his life. So, toward oneness and toward numberlessness, toward nothingness, and toward the I amness, the Buddhist heart of perfect wisdom sutra describes the same dynamic form is exactly emptiness, emptiness exactly form. Gosh, I don't leave that alone now because I want to do the five. We've done the two, the zero, the one, and the five. This one kind of gave me more of a light on the year to come, at least spiritually speaking. I don't know all the other things. But I find it here. Okay. This is one of the smaller Hebrew letters. It's number five up there. You'll see it. It is het. Actually, it's not that strong. It's kind of set under the breath, so to speak. Het, just that small, still voice, that little nudge that every man gets, if he's nudgeable, I mean. The scripture says, Father is consistently always giving instruction. But we have to stop and acknowledge that that instruction is given for a purpose. And he just needs to say a little tap. Just with me, sometimes it's just a little feeling, and maybe I shouldn't do that way. Maybe I need to back off and ask for a better way, better language, or put some charm into it. Anyway, the letter het means lo and behold. It means it wants your attention fixed on something else. It is one of the mildest sounding of the letters. Its sound is the merest breath or exhalation. As a suffix, het denotes the feminine form of a noun. It's kind of just like blowing your breath. It's instead of speaking it, you wouldn't even hear it if you could hear the Hebrews speaking, because it would kind of be hidden in other letters. The head whispers its way into our awareness. We can be sure that we are in a holy state when that behind the breath thing, a little something whispering to us to stop dead in your tracks what you're doing and say, okay, what? What does this mean? God loves you to ask questions. I never ask a question that He doesn't answer me with a circumstance, a synchronicity, serendipity, whatever you want to call it. It almost comes right in my path, and I know the answer then. But it does mean waiting and being patient to know what to do. It don't mean just keep going full speed ahead, hell bent for leather. It means stop the dang horse. Stop, look, and listen, like the red light you see, and you know what's going to happen if you don't stop. I'll read the rest of this because it's rich. It's a feminine thing. When, is how it's done, whispers its way into our awareness, we can be sure that we are in a holy state, close to the holy name, near to the mothering aspect of God. Oh, I so remember my childhood. Because Daddy was really the ruler of the roost, you know. And I'd be standing close to Mother, and I was going to voice my opinion about something, maybe to Daddy. And she wouldn't holler at me. She would pinch me and say, hey. That was her way of letting me know, shut up, and say it a different way at a different time. That was not the time to do that. So, mothers are like that, or at least my mother was, and I really appreciate her doing that. So, that's the five numbers that represent 2015. Last year, we were vividly given. Seven was our sum of all the numbers for 2014, and it was called the Year of the Sword, and did we see it? However, it's not rightly divided yet, but this year will bring more of the beginnings of a oneness in things. I don't know what all that means. It may mean a lot of destruction first, but the number for that is Chet. And Chet is the new beginnings of a new week. It's the number 8, and there's your infinity sign. It lays on its side. Thus, it means archway or new gateway. It also represents our fears and life unknown. So that's what we have for 2015, is new beginnings. And I, like you, Karen, I pray that it's in righteousness, in some kind of divine order for all men.
There has to be, with new beginnings, I think there has to be a falling away of something to have a beginning. Yeah. So we could definitely use that in our, and like you said, so many levels.
Yes.
Just put it in general, so many levels.
Yeah.
We need that. To bring in His righteousness and stop this arrogance And pride. Arrogance and pride is driving a lot of these different levels. You know, they're not under the right. You know, God's order needs to be. You know, we need to understand what his order is, in, as a country, as an individual. Yeah. What is his order? You know, for us, and walk in that. You know, going all over the place. You know, like you said. He whispers his way into our awareness.
Yes.
You know, so we begin to notice him, and that feminine aspect then can come. You know, it's not the law, is the masculine side, but the feminine side, yeah. That spiritual side needs to come and balance that law.
Yes. Well, that still goes back to the sword, because the scripture says, rightly dividing. That doesn't mean I take the sacrifice, shank or what all they ate, and divide it and give me the biggest portion. But we give equal portion to that is righteousness, and I have not seen that anywhere. Very little of that kind of righteousness.
Do you remember,
not in the public arena.
Do you remember as a kid sometimes to settle a disagreement when we like wanted a piece of cake or something? I mean, my dad and our family did it anyway. One of us would cut and the other one would take then. You know, they get to choose first, but we cut.
That's
and
a good
you
idea.
Made sure, and you made sure you cut it real
all
even.
All right.
Right then, didn't you? So they wouldn't get more.
That's a right thing right there.
So, I mean, we have to, that cutting starts with us.
Yes,
I guess
it does.
What I'm trying to say through that. That cutting has to be rightly divided here, for it can be rightly divided out there. You know, each one
absolutely.
Of us as individuals have to learn to do that.
Yes. And don't think we're going to escape it, anybody, period, especially a spiritual person, somebody else taking up a slack somewhere that we're not doing because we're hard-headed or stubborn or won't give. So that's not going to work. We're going to find ourselves in some real short, tight places if we don't. Because it's a personal level too. But for an overall picture, it really sounded hopeful.
Yeah, it does. It does. It says there is going to be a new beginning.
Well, it's eight, so.
And that's, I think we're ready for that after this year. I mean, that dividing hurts. You know, there's pain.
Really?
If he does that this year, you know, if we don't listen, you know, the rebellion will be dealt with. Our pride will be dealt with. If we don't listen. If we don't heed, we don't take the warning. The warning is out there.
Yep. I agree, but nothing's hit me yet. So I don't know how much
I'm not looking for an attack. You know, and I don't look at the negative side. I mean, if it happens, it happens. If it happens to me, it happens to me. You know, I need to get your attention. You know, it's like when you have you receive a diagnosis that sounds pretty bad, it gets your attention.
Yes.
And you look at it. It's the same thing. We have these diagnoses going on in our country, and we have to. And individually, we have to take a look at that. If we don't look at it, you know, it's not going to pass us by.
No.
You know.
Well, I'm not looking for an attack, but I am looking for correction. And I'm always looking for that.
And that can be a good thing. And that's a good thing.
I must.
You know,
because if I was completely corrected, there would be nobody to correct. So I'm not completely corrected. That's just the way that is.
That's true. We're all going to come in to that, not just one.
Yeah.
You know, into that perfection. It's not just being one. All of us are going to have to come to that.
I guess I'll learn to love it. I'm not too big on it, loving it yet, but...